Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
John and Joe, another episode ready to go. They're gonna talk about the good and the trash and anything in between. Cherishing make-believe, get ready for Halloween. It's the horror show. I know you miss those guys. Tune in and find out what's on their list tonight. They butcher and dissect, take apart and mutilate. Listen to your two favorite brainiacs communicate. It's the horror show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horror Show. A show that dissects, mutilates, dismembers, and butchers all of your favorite and not so favorite horror movies and other horror related events. I'm Sean.
I'm Joe.
Hello, Joe.
What's going on?
It's weird to say that when we're right next to each other. We've been out in, we're here in Tampa. By the time this airs, we would have already done our live show.
It was huge. Thank you.
It was.
Fantastic. Thanks for showing up.
It was amazing. Thank you all. But we're in Wybor.
Yeah.
Tonight.
Yes.
I got a little drunk. I'm feeling good. We found our spots. We scouted our post show locations. And they're going to be the castle, guys. Looks wild.
There will be a castle freak in there. For Dude, sure.
There is a place called the castle that is like, I don't know. People are getting whipped on stage there.
It is. There's many OSHA violations for sure.
The cleanup must be disgusting.
Yeah, it stinks in there.
Worse than a fucking porno theater. Worse than a fucking porno theater. But we've been up since 4 a.m. and
yeah,
we're here to do The Exorcist just to keep up with our schedule. So
live from the hotel room. So if you're watching on camera, looks nuts, doesn't it?
Yeah, it looks like a fucking shoot interview slash porn.
Sitting in the hotel cuck chair.
Joe's got the hotel cuck chair. I got the hotel office chair, which isn't much better than the cuck chair. Just moves around too much for the cuck to really enjoy. This is more the sex. They got the watches and the... How do I turn the watch off? Theater mode, probably, right? But we're doing so perfect timing for us to do The Exorcist in these conditions. One of the most. Is it the best movie we've ever done?
Oh, wow. I mean, we've done Jaws.
That's true.
We've done The Thing.
This is way better than Jaws. The Thing. the Jaws.
Fucking dude, come on. Come on.
Jaws fucking stinks. except Jaws 5, which was the one where they found Michael Caine to the bomb.
That was the fourth one.
That's the best one. Vengeful Shark. What were we saying?
You were asking if this was the best one that we've ever did.
Oh, yeah, and you said one.
So The Thing.
Oh, we've done Thing.
Dawn of the Dead.
The Thing is really good.
Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead is good. But, like, in terms of, like, a film.
Well, you... I mean, yeah, those other ones still count.
Those don't count. Like, this is a movie that transcends the genre.
It does. It does. I don't know if I want to say it now or not. But, yes, like, in terms of filmmaking, this is a masterpiece. In terms of acting, masterpiece. Screenwriting. Like, I think this is a perfect movie.
It really is.
You're high on it?
I don't watch this every year like you do. So this was like a fresh rewatch for me, and it was like, it's amazing. It's fucking good, amazing. Yeah. Every character in it, every actor in it, there's never a moment where you're like, they're acting. Maybe Linda Blair for a minute, but that's because kid actors are just the fucking worst no matter what. But even she's doing a very
good job. She's doing good for a kid actor, yeah.
But
some of the things that she says, which I know it's like an overdub, it's like an adult saying it.
Yeah.
But still, seeing it come out of that child's mouth.
It's crazy.
Like I, like you said, I watch this every year, and still every time I hear some of it, you're like, I need to like go to confession or something. this is wild. And I, it's no secret, I grew up like really Catholic. I come from a really Catholic family. I don't know if The Exorcist is as impactful to people that never grew up with religion or like don't fear God, don't fear going to hell or something like that. But for me, like this is like super impactful.
There are a lot of articles and studies on how The Exorcist impacted people at that time. And it was crazy. It made non-believers believers. It made Catholics like non-practicing be like, holy shit. Like I need to like get my fucking life together. It made people that like did it as a kid and didn't at that time be like, no, like this is like, this is what I was told to be afraid of.
Yeah.
And so there's some interesting articles about that and how it impacted like theology and religion at the time.
Interesting. Because I know it was like divided too, because William Peter Blatty was very religious. He's the one that wrote the story, The Exorcist.
Yeah.
And he went to Georgetown. He had like actual priests on set.
Yeah.
Give advice and like oversee the production and all that.
Yeah. And that said, the churches weren't thrilled with it. they didn't love it.
Well, but it was divided though, because some did. Some were like, this is good for business. Yeah, because
this is good for the business.
I mean, at its core.
Yeah.
At its core, it's actually not like a horror movie. At its core, it's a faith-driven movie because it's about this guy who's struggling with faith and then like he gets it back at the end.
I had a note about that where this book, because this was, okay, so William Peter Blatty writes the book first. Also, how many people are like writers and then adapt them into screenplays? Like not many, I feel like, but he is a guy that does it. He just writes a book and then adapts it for the screen really well.
Yeah, because he did with Exorcist 3 too.
Yeah. But you don't see that a lot. But I had a thing in here, I forget, I'll come to it, but that is a I wish I could find it, sorry. Anyway, It's an interesting thing for him to be religious and write this, and then William Friedkin is not religious, right?
I don't know if I looked anything up about his.
He's definitely became agnostic, but then what we talked about this at the bar a little bit tonight. He's also quoted as saying after this movie that he's like, I believe in
this movie's
God cursed. And the devil
and
the curses now. But then now he's like, well, I don't know. I'm just
yeah, because people are like getting sick and people are getting injured and like the production took longer than they wanted. And he's on record saying that he thinks it was cursed because they were making a movie about the devil.
Yeah, which is
which if you look into how this movie was made, that is not, it's actually very easily explained why these things were happening.
And it's him. It's him.
May he rest in peace.
It was almost a year shooting. It was over 200 days of shooting, which is crazy.
There was a guy, so there were scenes, well, let me backtrack. So they were recording, Sean told me, it was like a freezer, like a legitimate freezer.
Oh, yeah. They used a refrigerated room.
So it wasn't just like lowering the temperature of the room, cranking up the AC. It was a fridge. Like people were getting sick from being in that room. And he was making people do these shots over and over and over again. And people that were working on it, there's one person, he did not have a big role, but he said that he was there for one day of shooting and they did the same take like 300 times that day. And he got sick afterwards. So he missed 2 days of shooting and came back to the set and they're still shooting the same scene. Oh, yeah. So he was just like very meticulous and just making them do take after take after take in these terrible conditions.
Which is bizarre because some of the things he went one take with.
Right.
And it was always the ones that he hurt somebody like severely on.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that seems good.
Yeah, he knew. He's like, we gotta
We'll get past this.
Yeah. Can't dwell on this one.
We just broke Linda Blair's back. She's 11 years old. Broke her spine. That's a good take. Use that. Use that one. So it's really bizarre the way he made this movie. But you did a William Friedkin tribute recently.
I did. To Live and Die in L.A.
How was it?
That movie. Have you seen it?
No.
Dude, that movie should be talked about and watched way more than really? It is. Dude, it is phenomenal.
He also did The French Connection.
Yeah.
He did Blue Chips.
He did do Blue Chips. Which is, Shaquille O'Neal.
Dude, at the hype of Shaq Attack.
Hype of Shaq Attack, hype of basketball movies.
Yeah.
He did The Arab There with Kevin Bacon.
I remember.
Space Jam.
I remember that was like, Blue Chips was a big deal at the time.
Blue Chips was big.
And Nolte. Nick Nolte. Coming off of like
the it's DUI. It's like 20th photo. DUI. Yeah.
Is Nick Nolte the reason we have stricter DUI laws?
Possibly.
Because I feel like it was constantly with that guy. They exceeded the initial budget by a lot. The initial budget wasn't supposed to be that much. I think it was supposed to be... It went $2.5 million over budget, which is a lot of money. And it was a $12 million. So it ended up with a $12 million
budget. That's 1973.
Yeah. It's something insane. If you do the
inflation.
Oh wait, no, it's 12 with inflation, sorry.
Okay.
So I think it was supposed to be like, oh yeah, it was like 4.2. I don't know. Inflation makes no sense.
I completely agree.
Fucking bullshit.
Actually, the concept of money doesn't, but that's different. That's a different topic.
Listen, let's get those bitcoins. Throw us your bitcoins if you got them. I think they're useless now,
but they most definitely are.
I don't want to get on anyone's bad side, though. All right, so you got William Friedkin directing, mm-hmm. William Peter Blatty writing the story and the screenplay, and then he'll go on to do the third one. He skips the second one, which we're doing next week, which seems like it might be a fucking nightmare.
She's back. Reagan's back, and she might have psychic powers.
That's so stupid. That's so stupid. And back to Friedkin. He manipulated the actors to get genuine reactions so he would hit them.
Slap them.
Strike
them
across the face. Yeah. To get them shocked.
Including the priests. So like, I read that like the Catholic Church is very upset to learn that their priests were being physically assaulted.
Yeah. And it wasn't even for that much. Dude, one time he fired blanks without warning.
Yes.
Fired... Which, like, they still make the fucking explosion. It's a fucking bullet.
Yeah, it's a gunshot.
Firing a gunshot in front of people so they're shaking.
Which, as we know with the Crow and Alec Baldwin, it's not a good idea. You can't just
don't
assume.
Fuck around with blanks. He also told Miller that the vomit, which was porridge colored green, he's like, don't worry, it's just gonna hit you in the chest. So that way when it hit him in the fucking face like a fucking...
I mean, that's actually genius.
That's nuts.
That's a great reaction the guy has.
His reaction is crazy.
I mean, listen, in hindsight, everything he did is fucking cruel, right? Yeah. But in terms of the art, like, he accomplished what he set out for.
Because
these guys, like...
Oh, it's...
Yeah, I'm sure they're good actors, but those reactions, like... That seems very genuine that this guy, man, just got barfed on.
It's also interesting because when you watch interviews with Friedkin, he is awesome. He seems like a great guy.
Yeah.
He is like, and he's so like, he seems so down to earth, and he just like shits on these like pretentious actors being like, why the fuck do you need that? But then at the same time, he's like doing this on The Exorcist and you're like, all right, man, like take it fucking easy. He's so mad at what Al Pacino or... One of those fucking guys. He was like, that guy's a piece of shit. Let me work with Tommy Lee Jones all day.
No, dude, he's real mad at Oliver Stone for saying DVDs won't last long.
Dude, he's mad at so many people. No, because he's also mad.
Yeah,
he did a movie
Pacino.
With Tommy Lee Jones. And Al Pacino's in it. He's like, fuck Al Pacino. He's fucking nobody. Because Al Pacino, because Tommy Lee Jones prepped better.
Yes.
For the role. And he was fucking hot about it. He's kind of a lunatic, and I love it. And there was a lot of changes, and but like even Blatty, who was like didn't agree totally with Friedkin's view on the show, on the movie, was occasionally quoted as being like, he proved me wrong again. Yeah. Like he kept being like, no, it worked and I was fucking wrong. And this guy might be like a fucking genius.
Yeah.
So 200 days to film there, injuries to the cast. You got Reagan breaking her
coccyx. It's your tailbone.
Giving a woman scoliosis, giving the mom scoliosis.
Dude.
Giving people hypothermia.
And you said the mom had like an aversion to cold.
Yeah, yeah. She after filming that she like can't go to cold locations because she's like PTSD from being in the fridge,
locked in a fucking fridge. Which I was telling Sean when this came out in 73. So yeah. I think it must have been the 25th anniversary, which would have been 1998.
Yeah,
they did like a TV special. So if anybody listening knows what that is or where to find it, please let me know because I remember my dad watching it. And my dad, like, he's probably never seen this movie ever, but I just remember him being furious because he didn't believe that because Miller, was that his name? Last name? Miller?
Yeah.
Jeremy Miller or Jason Miller. He was claiming that it was as cold as like 100 degrees below Fahrenheit, which I still think might be an exaggeration. Dude,
that's like you die. Like, I think you die instantly.
But I just think we remember that. And my dad be like, these actors are all full of shit. But it did, you know, it seemed like it was pretty cold.
These fucking Holly weird actors don't know what they're saying, which is true. But it's still too cold for other people. British film historian Sarah Crowther believes the stories of the curse were disseminated by Warner Brothers, which I don't believe because William Friedkin was out there just talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. But why would Warner Brothers do that?
Liking it to William Castle's elaborate marketing gimmicks, like thinking it would hype it up. But I don't think it would. I think people would be like, what the
fuck? Yeah, I think people just saw it and were like,
yeah.
I mean, it had an immediate reaction. People were like very upset or loved it.
Yeah. She believes most of the aspects of the curse are really just the result of Friedkin's driving and relentless production, which I love. I love. And Exorcist holding box office records for years as the highest grossing. It was the top grossing R-rated horror film for almost half a century before The Sixth Sense beat it out.
Wow.
Yeah. And then It took the honor in 2017, which is kind of nuts. How did It?
It took it, yeah. I mean, you remember the hype for It.
Yeah. On both charts, we went together, I think.
Did, with the, yeah.
On both charts, The Exorcist, along with The Blair Witch Project, are the only 20th century releases in the top 10.
Wow.
So, pretty fucking cool there. There's two versions. There's a director's cut, and then there's a regular cut. Joe watched the regular cut. I watched 95% of the director's cut.
I've seen the director's cut. The end scene.
Not much.
The end scene is a little different, and it has the spider walk scene.
And the spider walk, which is... fine.
It's fine.
Did you know that's not like CGI?
Well, yeah, it's 1973.
Well, I thought it was a little bit of like when it got released, it was like a big deal when they released that footage, and I thought it was a little bit of like a whatchamacallit, like a George Lucas.
Okay,
like that's fair. He like CGI and fucking aliens dancing at the fucking bar.
Listen. I just rewatched like the original cuts of the Star Wars. Like that alien, I forgot that alien band was actually in there. So George, yes. because I knew that it's in the remaster one, but George saw that and was like, of all things I need to fix.
I need a dancing
alien. It needs to be this and have the one like hit that high note, you know, like, what?
He's a fucking asshole.
He is an asshole.
Like, there's a million things you could fix in that movie. That's not the thing. All right. So, where are we at with time here? Because I was debating how to do this episode because there's a lot to talk about.
Want to do a quick cast run through?
We could do a cast run through. Before we do that. Oh, that I found that thing that we were talking about at the beginning related to William Peter Blatty. My question was going to be, because we were talking about how you said, like, this isn't a horror movie. It's kind of like a religious.
Right.
Like, film. And that was my question when I wrote it down, where I was like, was the novel even intended to be horror, or was it more of like a drama set in this religious world that happened to have an exorcism?
Yeah, I think it's more of that.
That's what I would feel like. Because really, when you watch this movie, that's, it is a horror, but it's kind of not. It's this like dramatic telling. Like Father Karras's story is...
That's the thing. It has multiple story arcs, and all of them somehow work perfectly.
Yeah.
But if you view Karras as like the main character instead of Reagan, it's a completely different movie.
Yeah.
Whereas if you view it just about Reagan,
it's a dramatic film.
If it's just about Reagan, then yeah, it's a horror movie. If it's about Karras, then no, it's not.
And it's blended so well between all of those little story arcs that it's
it's
awesome.
It's masterful.
Yeah. Anyway, so before we get to the cast, early memory of the movie.
Yeah, so I saw it as a kid, and like, you know, I come from a very religious house, which my parents didn't let me watch a lot of like gory stuff. So the fact that I got to see this as a kid is actually kind of baffling now. But it scared the fucking shit out of me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I've told this story on the show. My dad showed it to me pretty fucking young. I can't even tell you what age I was. Maybe elementary school. Maybe middle. No, I had to be in elementary school. And then I don't want to say it, like, terrified me, like, the people in the 70s. Like, because, like, again, it was, like, the period of, like, Jaws and shit where people, like, I don't know. Everyone was fucking dumb, I guess, and just saw movies and were, like, lost their fucking minds. Because that's what happened. People were, like, fainting at this. Which, that wasn't it. But, like, I definitely was unsettled as a kid.
Yeah.
And then my dad, immediately after showing it to me, was like, check this out. And then my sisters and mom were at home. And he put on the vinyl of Tubular Bells, which
Mike Oldfield.
Why do you fucking own that?
It's a good prop rock. It's a good prop rock album.
Oh, is it?
Yes, it is.
Puts that on and just like blares it through the house. And I was like, huh. I had to go to bed after that. It's like, okay.
Does your dad still listen?
I don't know.
Tell him to call in. I've got some explaining to do.
It was so insane. I was like, oh, because like if I wasn't scared then, I definitely was after the song played.
Yeah.
Blaring in the house.
Let's talk. I'm glad you brought up the song. Let's talk about that for a second.
Okay.
Do you like that song?
Oh, or, yeah.
Do you think it's like in the upper echelon of horror themes?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, right? But you know what I thought of while watching it today? It's so weird because it's so iconic, but like the Friday the 13th score or the Halloween score, It plays when the killers are like on the scene.
Yeah.
You know evil is lurking. Whereas Tubular Bells just plays when Ellen's walking on the fucking sidewalk.
And I fucking love it.
And it plays again at the end credits.
It plays at calmer moments.
Yeah.
Building up to.
So it doesn't like signify. Yeah. It doesn't. It's not present when evil's present.
No.
Or danger's present. It's just there.
Yeah.
It's
almost like the ominous, like get ready, like sound. I noticed that. I thought it was interesting. And I thought the way they use sound in this is super interesting because the dialogue is like really low and like abrasive noises are super high. That fucking X-ray scene is like the loudest scene in the movie. Dude. It's also like the scariest scene in the movie.
That scene, what is it called?
Disgusting.
Like it's not an echocardiogram. It's like it's anio.
Yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't matter, but it's 1973, so they don't have the luxuries we have today. So we watch them shove something into this girl and then manually pump the blood out, and it's disgusting.
And people verified that was how it was done back then. And it also was noted that everyone that watched The Exorcist, like in test screenings, was like, that's the worst scene in the movie.
Yeah, no, that's fucking vile. It looked like they were doing it to Reagan.
But imagine making a movie about, like, which is a vile movie, and everyone's like, hey, that one scene that you probably don't even need in the fucking movie at all.
You for sure don't need that.
Is the worst scene that you
for sure don't need.
Which is an artistic choice, I think, to be like the horrors of the real world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, again, not necessarily a horror movie, isn't it?
Right, like a kind of little bit artsy, a little artsy there. All right, give me a rundown of this cast because big cast.
Who we got? Well, we already talked about.
You got Max von Sydow looking young as hell.
Dude, motherfucker. It's I mean, he was in Ingmar Bergman films before this. He's been in movies This is 73, so he's already like a 25-year vet, right? Yes. Like, he's prominent in the 50s and 60s. He looks old as balls here.
Some of it was makeup.
That's fine. We've seen him in other movies from the 70s, and he looked just as old. This motherfucker died 3 years ago. He died 3 years ago. And, like, yeah, again, he had makeup on this movie. He looked very close to death at the time of filming this.
Dude, he looked old as shit. I think he was still in his 40s. Was he?
I think he was born like 27. So, nuts. Yeah.
So he's almost 100 years old when he died.
Yeah.
What a wild guy. All right.
Good for Max.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Legend. We had Ellen Burstyn as Chris McNeil. She's back for the new one because we need Reagan's mom back.
Yeah. Why? I'm so excited that we're doing that for the show. That's going to be great.
I don't think the movie's going to be great, but I'm very excited to. Listen, I want it to be good. I want to be clear. I want this to surprise me. I just have a hunch.
Sneaking suspicion. I have a
sneaking suspicion. I'm not going to like it very much. But hey, prove me wrong.
I think they're going to be doing some weird stuff with this. I don't know what they're going to do with the religious aspect.
Will Reagan get possessed again?
No. Dude, a fucking 60-year-old woman Friedkin shows back up, starts jerking her around again, breaking her back again.
Well, Friedkin's dead, so she's safe.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, both of them they still claim to have lasting pain and injuries from
it. Sure they do. There's no doubt.
All right, what else?
Oh, we got Lee J. Cobb, who he's in The Virginian, as I'm sure you know.
Oh, shit, yeah. Anyone with a weird dad that made him watch TV shows and movies from the 1950s and 40s will know The Virginian, yeah.
Yeah. It's a classic.
Okay. Yeah.
He's also 12 Angry Men. That's where I know him from. But I just want to talk about his character because he's the police detective.
That guy's
he might be my favorite character in this entire movie. Every time he's on scene, he is kind of comic relief. Like, is he making jokes or is he just a dick?
I think we're supposed to think he's sly. I think he's supposed to be a sly guy. Dude, when he's like, when we're introduced to him, he is talking to Father Karras. And he's like, so what do you think about witchcraft? And he's like, I wrote a paper on it. And he's like, oh, did you? And Father Karras is like, yeah, I did. And he's like, I know.
I read it. Yeah, I read the whole thing.
Slick move, dude.
He is literally the most useless detective in cinema history. This man solves nothing, and he is present during the entire film. He is downstairs for most of like the events, which I know he can't be in the room during the actual exorcism, but this man does nothing. And then at the end, after everything is wrapped up, he just like walks up into the room and like the shot is on him, like he's the hero, and he's just like looking at the leftover evidence, being like, "Whoa, I guess this solves case that. Closed. My work here is done. You didn't fucking do anything.
Another case solved by Lieutenant William Kinderman." And what's crazy is in the director's cut, he has a prominent role in that ending.
Yeah, because he has the medallion, right?
Where him and Father Dreyer, or whatever the fuck his name, Dyer. Him and Father Dyer, like, go away hand in hand, becoming buddies.
Yo, that's right. It's like a buddy guy.
Yeah. Like, oh, thank God we made it through this.
Have dialogue together?
Dude, the two true heroes of the movie are dead. And those two walk away like they fixed the world. They rid the world of
the people. Lights fade out on them walking
They walk away like hand in hand being like, another job well done for the priest that wasn't there and the cop that sat downstairs twiddling his thumbs.
And his mustache is the most Hall of Fame detective mustache ever. Really? He's honestly my favorite character in this movie.
I also loved when he shows up. I'm ruining every scene with him in it, but they honestly blew my mind every time he was on the screen. He shows up to Reagan's house to talk about the dead guy, and is like, I actually don't know what he says. He's basically like, the only person that could have done it is Reagan. But then he's like, but that's silly. So I think a guy came in, killed him, and pushed him out of Reagan's window while she was sleeping. That's his conclusion. And the mom's like, well, that would be nuts. And he's like, yeah. That's all. That's, he's like, well, gotta go. I'll talk to Reagan.
That's the thing. Because he's like, he's like, everything he says, he's being facetious. But I don't know if anybody he's talking to realizes that.
Yeah.
Because he's exhausting. Just fucking talk to him straight. He found probable evidence at the bottom of the stairs. He finds that clay thing that Reagan made for her mom, indicating that Reagan killed this man.
He was definitely inside.
Yeah. And the detective picks it up and then goes in and is like, well, guess we'll
he's like, never did know. She make these clay things? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, that's cool.
You now have like the most probable cause you'll ever get that she is involved. You could probably do something here.
And Chris puts it to her mom, puts it together before the cop does.
Later, she confesses to the priest.
Yeah, later, she's like, fucking Reagan killed that guy. Like, for sure.
Which, again, I think the cop did put it together, but for some reason, is just fucking dragging his feet and
that's being true. Facetious. He was just like, he was like, I'll talk to her when she wakes up.
What a character, man. What a character.
What a character. Right.
And but we'll wrap it up because we have Linda Blair, who we know. The guy who dies that fell down the stairs, I just want to highlight because I know I've talked to a lot of listeners who watch Darby O'Gill and the Little People with me every year. He's one of the leprechauns. Jack McGowan is his name. And then Jason Miller, of course, Father Karras. I will only bring him up because he is Jason Patrick's stepdad and our boy from – Class of 1999 and Teen Witch. His last name's Miller. That's his real dad.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yep.
That's so cool. Yep. Dude, connections like that are crazy. Also, this John McGowan.
Oh, dude, I mean, born to play a drunk leprechaun.
Dude, look at it. If you're at home, just look at his Wikipedia. Like, that is the drunk. He literally has the neck of like a cartoon leprechaun from like the 50s and 60s. What a guy. Yeah. He's also plays a great drunk in this movie.
He is. I mean, I don't know if he's acting.
He's not. The two scenes that he's in, just insulting
a German man.
German guy.
That had to be improvised.
Dude, absolutely. Including when the German guy tries to swing on him. Dude, it's a freaking set. He was probably like,
dude, exhausted.
Dude, he was probably like, rip on this fucking German guy. Like, this German guy sucks. Like, fucking rip into him. And then told the German guy, like, nothing. And like, this guy's just picking on him on set.
Screaming in his face, calling him a Nazi.
Dude, calling him like Klaus and shit. It's like the funniest shit. All right. So there's your cast. Do we want to go through the movie? Yeah, I guess we have to go through the movie scene by scene.
How do you feel about the opening? Because it's kind of a cold open of sorts.
So we open in northern Iraq at an archaeological dig.
Yeah.
And it's the first time we see Father Marin. Is that his name? Marin?
Yeah.
It is an interesting movie, and it is so memorable for me. It's some of the most memorable scenes for me outside of, like, the actual exorcism scenes. Because it was just, like, it was so staggering to visually. Like, all the little things that happened in that. Father Marin taking his medicine at the table. Because you're like, what the fuck is going on with this guy?
Which is important later.
Yeah. The guy with one eye just staring at him, like, from across the road. That always stood out for me. The clock stopping when he's, like, talking to that guy.
Yeah.
Like, it really set up this, like,
the lady evil. Almost running him over.
Yeah. Like, there was these scenes that just – and, like, I'm watching it, and I haven't seen it in years, and I remember these moments from when I was young, seeing it for the first time and being like, it's an unsettling opening scene. So I think it's well done in that sense.
Agreed. Sometimes I feel like it could have been, and this is just me like looking for a criticism, because again, I think this movie is perfect. I think the book, from what I've read, the book explains it a little bit better as to how like this ties in later on in the story, because when you just watch this cold open, like, yeah, Marin's already come face to face with a Pazuzu statue, yeah, but how does it get to Reagan? Right. But
that, yeah.
And I wish that, like, if my, I had one qualm about this, I wish that was explained more. I guess the book talks about how the entity Pazuzu was, I guess, traveling, and then the Ouija board activated him.
Okay. Because, yeah, that was actually one of the things that I noticed also. And I have always thought, because it was just like, he brings that thing over, even rewatching it. I was like, maybe I just miss it all the time because I'm an idiot, a distracted idiot. I was like, maybe this time I'll notice how Pazuzu brings over the demon. And no,
it doesn't. Because it's cool to see that Pazuzu exists before your Reagan.
Right.
Right? But yeah, could have been explained a little better.
Then we go to Georgetown, where Reagan and her mom, Chris, live. Remember how big Hoya's gear was in the 90s?
Huge. Absolutely huge. Patrick Ewing, baby.
That must have been it, right?
Yeah.
That was the only reason for that?
It had to be.
Right. Because why else was anyone watching the Georgetown Hoyas? Also, what's a Hoya? I mean, I know their logo's a dog. That was like from back in the day when old dudes just named college mascots the weirdest shit.
I'm going to look it up right now. That's a good question.
A fucking Hoya. It's probably nothing.
What is a Hoya?
By the way, out here in Ybor, they just got fucking roosters running around.
They do, everywhere.
It's fucking insane. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it. You got it? I think it's a made-up thing.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything. Rumor has it one clever student chanted Hoya Saxa, which translates to what rocks, and the cheer grew, and students began to consistently yell Hoya Saxa. Eventually, Saxa was dropped, and people just yelled Hoya. So,
that is dumb as fuck.
The Georgetown Hoyas, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, we meet Reagan and her mom, Chris. Chris is an actress working on a film. Reagan is her little daughter. I think she's supposed to be 12 in the movie. Very sweet family. Dad's away. I couldn't tell if they were divorced or what that was.
I think so, because she says he's in Europe and he doesn't call her on her birthday. And
yeah, it's true.
The mom's very, very mad.
She is very upset about that. She's very upset that. And then, as you mentioned, they play that music when Chris is just walking down the street, right? And it's a great scene and it's amazing. And watching that with that music, you can find a ton of movies that replicate that. And the one that stood out to me was, of course, now I can't think of the name of it. House of the Devil.
Okay.
They kind of do this, and it's like a synth beat, and it's the girl walking home from like work at the very beginning of the movie, right before it flashes House of the Devil. So I think they actually set up like a thing here where it's like you can play ominous music in this moment of like, before shit hits the fan.
Yeah.
And it like just gets under your skin. It's like ominous. It's very ominous.
Yeah.
Anyway, and while this is all happening, they're weaving in Father Karras.
Yes.
Into scenes. He's in the background of scenes. She's walking by. He's viewing her filming scenes in the movie. But we finally meet him. He's a very humble, family-oriented guy taking care of his mom.
That is true, but he's also, I said this to Sean while I was watching it, this guy, I say mope a lot on the show, this guy is like the king of mopes.
This guy is king mope.
This guy is unbelievable.
He's such a mope that later on, like, Father Marin knows what the fuck he's talking about. Everyone knows this.
Right.
Father Marin shows up and he's all business, and he's like, hey, the only thing you can't do is talk to this fucking thing. It's a fucking asshole. He's just going to lie to you. Just don't talk to the fucking demon. And then as soon as Father Marin's like, hey, I got to use the bathroom real quick, I'll be right back, fucking Father Karras goes in and starts fucking crying because the fucking demon's like, your mom sucks cocks. And he's like, you're not my mom. You're like, dude, fucking one thing he told you about. And Father Mary walks in and is like, dude, what did I tell you?
And then he dies. Like, this takes a lot, Karis.
Karis sucks, kind of. But his character is interesting. I do like it, but he is the biggest mope. Orient, he likes boxing a lot.
Is he in shape?
Dude, I couldn't tell. Wait, priest shape? Like, hey.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
He's a 7, but he's a priest that box. He's a 6, but he's a priest that box. I don't even think I'm doing that meme right. That's like the third time I just said it to Joe tonight.
Fucking hammering it tonight.
But Father Karis is having a real tough time with work in the church. And he's like, he talks to his buddy who's a priest. By the way, have you ever seen more priests? The priests per capita in Georgetown must be, they're just wandering around the streets. They just run into each other.
I mean, listen, they have to. It's a Catholic.
Oh, okay. They have a seminary there.
Okay.
There's so many. They're just like bumping into each other. Yeah, that's dude, there's one at a party later.
Have you not seen the seminary in Cheshire?
Yeah, I've seen it, but I don't see them walking.
Jogging like the military.
So they don't masturbate. That's the rumor. Listen, that's what Buzz's dad told me.
That rumor now checks out.
Well, Buzz told me, and he said that's what my dad told me.
How old were we? Why is dad telling you that?
Dude,
I'd be mad at my dad telling me that any age.
Dude, if my dad said that to me, I'd be like, get out of my fucking house. What the fuck are you talking to me about?
What a theory to have.
The theory was that they jog and walk everywhere because they can't masturbate. So they have to like get it out.
I mean,
through running.
I suppose that would make sense. Like, to fight temptation of anything, but like, why focusing on masturbating? Why telling your young child
you're gonna get home eventually?
Yeah, dude, I crank one out after a run all the time.
Oh wait, dude, I'm way more fired up after like a workout.
Yeah, you get the testosterone running.
Yeah, dude, like it's way worse. Well, there you go. There you have it.
Explains a lot about the Buzz family.
House of Buzz.
House full of idiots.
Sorry, I'm going to have to call. I'm not editing this, so you're going to have to. Sorry. We're in a fucking hotel. all right. So Father Karis is in it. He's a boxer. He's talking to this other priest in town. And he's like, I think I lost my faith. So Father Karis is kind of not feeling it. And he wants out.
Yeah.
He wants out. And we'll see later he has a strained relationship with his parents because he chose
priesthood.
Like, they're like, you could have been a fucking doctor. Yeah.
And I think that's important, too, because... like, I think he feels guilty. Like, he could have helped his mom more if he was a doctor.
Well, yeah, because she gets fucking locked up into, like, a state institution later, and no one's got any money to help her. Although, the dad doesn't help. Like, at least the son's doing something good. But the dad's like, well, if only you had made some fucking money.
Is that the dad? I figured it was, like, the mom's brother or something.
No, I think it's the dad.
Why isn't the dad living with the mom? What is he doing?
That's a great question. Making pizzas.
Yeah, I thought it was like her brother or something.
Yeah,
like
his uncle. They're very Italian.
Sergeant and Mr. Smith, you're gonna love this house.
Bunk beds in a closet?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Back to the McNeils, though. McNeil, Reagan McNeil. Reagan and her mom find a Ouija board, or mom finds a Ouija board. She's like, have you been using this? Reagan's like, yeah, I've been talking to this fucking guy, Captain Howdy. My kid said that. I'm throwing the fucking Ouija board out.
For sure. You
Captain Howdy? That came out of my kid's mouth? No. It's gone. But instead, they play with it. And
remember Captain Billy? Speaking of bugs.
Fucking Night of the Loomis?
Night of the Leapus.
Night of the Leapus. Loomis. Night of the Loomis is at our live show tomorrow. Guy causes more fucking destruction. I'm so excited to talk about that again. When I was watching Halloween 2, not to get off track of this, when I rewatched Halloween 2 for the live show, I was like, man, that bit we have of talking about how Loomis is actually like the bigger menace in the Halloween universe is the most true thing in the fucking world. That guy causes chaos everywhere he fucking goes. He is such a fucking menace and just fucking ruins everything.
Everything.
Everything, dude. And the second one, he is fucking insane. The movie opens with him. We're going to talk about it tomorrow. But the movie opens with him going up to some guy's door and being like, "Rah!" And the guy's like, "What's going on?" And he's like, "Evil's loose." And then he just runs away. Imagine like somebody comes to your door and says that and runs away.
I mean, in the first movie, he says to the cop all the time. He's like, "If you don't find this man, everybody's going to die." Like, what are you telling me? God.
And it's funny because in the second one, a cop is like, "This is all your fault." And he's like, "No, it's not." All he says is, "No, it's not." No, I think it is. All right, anyway. So they're talking to Captain Audi. Also, Chris thinks that there's rats in the ceiling, but there's not. And Reagan is now telling Chris that her bed is shaking. So that's that. Also, Chris goes to look for those rats that she thinks are in the ceiling.
Listen,
psycho move.
Psycho move, brave. Those sounds weren't animals. You are an adult. I would be out of there very quickly.
I would call the police and be like, there's
a man inside my house.
Yeah, sure.
And also, like, I know when the man opens, like, the maitre d' that's in the house, the German guy, when he opens the thing, mm-hmm. it causes, like, a draft. But the candle that she's holding, the flame, like, blows up.
Yeah.
It's not from the draft. Like,
no, it's the demon.
Yeah, I know, but, like, why is she, like,
oh, it's just no, you? Dude, that would be crazy to see. It would be insane. After that, she takes Reagan to the doctors because of these things that she's dealing with. One thing that people have noted about like how The Exorcist holds up is the medical diagnosis for Reagan, which they are insane. And she's like, they were talking about how at the 25th one, because that was a big release that you're talking about, because they re-released it on home video and in theaters. And at the 25th anniversary, whenever the doctors like prescribed something or said something to Chris, like the audience laughed because they were like, "This fucking psycho, this is the craziest shit we've ever heard." Because the doctor's like, she goes to the doctor. She starts screaming at the doctor. Suddenly, she's just like saying the most insane stuff to him. And then the doctor's like, "Yeah, just this nerve disorder. Just give her Ritalin." And Chris is like, "Should I take her to a therapist?" And he's like, "No, why would you do that? Just give her the medicine."
Yeah.
He's like, so like, why? No, that's insane. Why would you fucking do that? Which is fucking amazing. But Reagan is acting bizarre. When he's like saying, "Can you feel this?" She's like giving him the reaction test. And she's like, "I don't feel anything." And then what is, oh. He goes outside. Oh, disorder of the nerves is what he calls it. And then the doctor's like, "She said something like really fucking bad to me." And Chris is like, "What?" And he's like, "I don't know if I should even say it out loud." And he was right, because what she said to him was, "Keep your fingers away from my goddamn cunt." That's fucking nuts. That's fucking the craziest thing. How did this movie get passed through?
It did. I don't know.
70, what was it, 71?
73. Like the crucifix scene alone.
Dude, that scene's fucking...
How did the MPAA okay that?
That's nuts. Also, they keep calling it masturbation in that scene. That's not masturbation.
No, that's a stabbing.
Yes.
Self-mutilation.
That's fucking crazy. I had a quote in here from when they were casting. William Friedkin's a little out of pocket with everything he does. I have to find it. But basically, Reagan... Fuck, I wish I could find it. But when he was casting Reagan, he, like, talked to her and was like, hey... Oh, here it is. I found it. He was questioning her, and he's like, did you read the book? And she was like, yeah. And he's like, what's it about? And she was like, a girl that gets possessed by the devil and does a bunch of bad things. And he's like, what does that mean? And she's like, she pushes a man out of a bedroom window, and she hits her mother across the face, and she masturbates with a crucifix. Friedkin then asked Linda if she knew what masturbation meant. Okay, that's a little off pocket. And she says, yeah, it's like jerking off, isn't it? And she giggled a little bit. And then he asked, Joe's face right now, he's like turning the corner on Friedkin. He said, have you ever done that? And she said, sure, haven't you?
God. And the worst part about that is, like, Friedkin probably told that gleefully. It's like, oh, this is how the conversation happened.
Classic little kids. Yeah. Kids say the darndest things, don't they?
Insane.
But, yeah, no, they call that scene masturbation, and I almost wonder if they say that to, like, if that's how they got it by the MPAA instead of, like, mutilation.
I mean, the MPAA has eyes.
But have they ever masturbated? You're really counting on them to have never mastered. Imagine them in the room being like, I don't know, maybe that is how they do it.
Oh, the problem is that they just don't know how women masturbate. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Makes sense. Hey. That's what those dildos are for.
They're just so oblivious. All right, I guess we buy it. Fucking blood everywhere, but...
they do bleed.
They do that, so maybe that's... Perhaps that's what happened here. Yeah, no. Fucking insane. And I also read a thing where, like, some cast member was, like, had to show Friedkin. He was like, this is how... Dude, this makes no sense for this scene. And also, he claims this... The masturbation scene, there's, like, 5 extra minutes that they, like, cut out of it. If you don't have the video version on Patreon, please watch it. Joe's face.
It's fucking... I mean, this, like, Friedkin's MO, because he made that movie Cruisin' with Al Pacino.
Yeah.
Supposedly there's like a 5-minute fisting scene that was cut out.
So she's like masturbating for like 5 minutes. But apparently somebody on set was like, that's not how women masturbate. And like gave Friedkin like... a course on how women masturbate. And they were like, it's more like this. And then, by the way, this is what's in the fucking movie. So I don't know who told them that. The MPAA.
It's like, this that's is- not how my wife does it.
Anyway. The director of the movie that Chris is in is the guy that's played by Jack McGowan. Burke is his name. He's the one directing the film with her. We cut to her party where he's there, and he is obscene. You see him first, and he says, "There seems to be an alien pubic hair in my gin." I don't even understand that.
No, that'd be a sad joke.
And of course, there's a priest at the party because there's just priests everywhere. And the drunk guy just keeps calling guys Nazis and like okay Klaus. And then of course, as all parties were in like the 60s and 70s, some random dickhead gets on a piano and everyone sings a song with him. And it's some old timey song.
It's an old timey song. And also that song breaks out. Like, I know you said that he calls the German man a Nazi. Yeah. That doesn't do it justice. He says, you cunting hun, you bloody damn butchering Nazi pig. And he screams it in his face and it gets choked out by him. And then they all break out in the song, including that guy.
It's fucking insane. Imagine somebody saying that at a party, just bringing the vibes down.
Cunting hun.
That party is quickly interrupted by Reagan, though, who pisses on the floor. And announces that you're going to die going up there.
To an astronaut.
Yeah.
To an astronaut. I mean, dude, pissing on the floor, like, the scene that honestly unsettles me. And I think also, Exorcist kind of, I should have said it before, Exorcist kind of hits more as a parent.
Oh, yeah.
Watching this with Reagan now, because you're like, what? Like the mom in this movie, it's very clear, like, she's not a villain. She wants to get Reagan help. She wants to do what's best. She wants medical, like, she doesn't know what's going on. Nobody knows what's going on. Like, it must be terrifying for the mom. And, like, I don't know. This piss scene just, like, always gets to me. Like, just walk. It's not as, like, obscene as what's about to happen. Right. But it's a little undertone.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you're saying, Chris is a mom. Like, Chris never settles for what anybody tells her in this.
Yeah.
Like, anytime a doctor's like, it's this, she's like, are you fucking sure? Because this is nuts. Yeah. Like, this is not. That
she's desperate,
and escalates more and more, which they're giving her better answers to an extent, but she's like, it's not fucking that, you fucking idiots. Yes. Like, get a fucking grip. And that's frustrating as a parent, especially because we've all dealt with doctors. No offense to the fucking science community and the doctor community, sometimes they're fucking morons. Like, they really fucking are. They give you the shittiest fucking. They're like, yeah, just do the, okay. Like, are you fucking kidding me right now? Like, I just told you what was wrong. And then it's always what you said. And they're like, ooh, that's weird. No, it's not. Told you that the first time I fucking called you. Fucking dipshit. Anyway. So that night, Chris goes in to check on Reagan because she hears some noises. And she actually sees the bed shaking. Bed is fucking moving.
Yep.
We get some scenes with Father Karras dealing with grief. His mother's passed away now at this point. Also some
Demi.
some scenes of Reagan acting just way out of pocket. Just, we get a few of those scenes together.
You know what? You see Karras' nightmares, like the mom at the subway just walking down, and I don't know. It has nothing to do with, like, the devil or the possession, but something about it is just, like, so haunting. Like,
or does it? Because he sees things that he will see later. Like, he sees the necklace dropping.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it is the devil.
I mean, it's all connected.
Yeah. You know what's more insane? The most insane thing in this movie is when Chris is talking to a doctor who's smoking a cigarette in a hospital, which isn't the craziest part, but he's 10 inches away from her face talking while smoke is coming out of his mouth in her fucking face. And she doesn't punch him in the fucking mouth for doing that. I mean, that was a time.
Listen, non-smoking in public places is a very recent history.
Yeah, it's fucking nuts. Dude, talk like 10 inches from your face telling you bad news and smoke's just coming out into your own face.
I mean, do you remember the restaurants in Cheshire?
Oh, yeah, it was like, crazy.
The waitresses could, like, smoke while taking your order. It was wild.
It was nuts.
It's like I know people were mad being like, I thought this was America, right? Like, when you think about it. That's so fucking disrespectful. You can't fucking not smoke while you're talking to me for 2 seconds.
You can't take fucking
blow it all over my food.
You can't take seconds out of your day. It's also like that video that's like resurfaced of people like reacting to like, you can't drink beer while you drive your car, and they're like, this is fucking bullshit. I just need a beer on the road. Yeah, no, the cigarette stuff was fucking wild. They end up bringing Reagan in for surgery. We already kind of talked about that because they think there's a lesion on her brain. They think that's what's causing everything.
Yeah.
So they do this giant x-ray, which does all this shit.
Dude, give her a lumbar tap?
Fucking
wild.
Yeah. That, of course, shows nothing. So then the doctors end up showing up back up at the house for an emergency call. An iconic moment of Reagan being absolutely mauled in her bed, being thrown up from the waist, like hinging at the waist.
Where she gets hurt, right?
Yeah, it's where she hurt her back, broke her fucking bones. It's not hurting your fucking back. It's fucking a problem. Jerking her up and down. And that line, keep away, the sow is mine. Fuck me, to a fucking, it's fucking nuts.
Yeah.
It's fucking nuts. I don't even know how you write that. The sow is mine.
Yeah, that demon is not very nice.
That demon is horny as fuck, man.
It's a child.
Well, it's not. I mean, the demon's in there.
Yeah, I know, but that's what, I mean.
Yeah.
But he's doing it.
Demon's horny. Oh, yeah. The demon's horny.
No, I get that.
It's not his problem. The vessel's a different age. I'm sure he would have.
Why are you defending the demon?
Like, I'm sure the demon had other preferred vessels he could have taken, but this is where he ended up. Right. She called Captain Howdy. It's not the gay's fault. It's not Pazuzu's fault.
He does say he wants Karis.
Free Pazuzu. He does want Karis, which is weird.
Which is weird, because wouldn't he want Merit?
Merit? Wouldn't you just want somebody cool?
But he's like already come face to face with Merit. Like, yeah. Shouldn't it be like a revenge tale for Pazuzu?
That's what I thought.
Fucking beef with Karis?
What I want to know, too, is like these demons are just fucking little dickheads, right? Like, I think this demon is interesting. This demon has personality, which I think is lacking in most exorcism movies that you see. Demon is a fleshed out personality. It is very horny, but it's also like, it's fucking weird. It's got its own like quirks to it. Like, it lies a lot. It does. It says it's the devil, but it's not. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's actually, like, super interesting with this demon. Like, and, like, I wish there was, like, an expanded universe of that where it's, like, these fucking demons are, like, it's not the devil. Like, a lot of people think the exorcist is she's possessed by the devil, but it's this fucking little weird little demon that's just like, I'm the devil. And then they're like, no, you're not. And he's like, oh, whoops.
Yeah, you're right. Dude, it's like Beetlejuice, right?
Yeah, it kind of is.
It's an obnoxious, like, if Beetlejuice was more foul mouthed,
yes,
it would be Pazuzu.
Fucking Karis throws tap water on him and he's like,
okay, so that's the other thing. Like, The Exorcist, it's such a thin line because it would have been so easy for this movie to turn goofy, right? And there's probably people out there that do think it's goofy, but it treads such thin water because it does do. It's like almost slapstick how it reacts to it being on there.
Oh,
the things that it's saying.
Oh, yeah, dude. Some of the when it's laying. It's like there's shit that like you can't help but like fucking laugh a little bit about. Dude, Marin is giving the performance of his fucking life, being like just doing the Our Father and it's just this tense moment and Reagan's just like oh, blah, blah, blah.
Dude, doing that with the tongue and just like, fuck him.
Like, it's fucking wild. He's just a little fucking asshole, this demon. Yeah. Like, he's such a little piece of shit.
It's a good way to look at it, yeah.
It's fucking nutty. All right, so that's that Reagan moment. Writhing in pain, the white eyes, slapping the doctor.
Yeah. I'm sorry. We should probably say this in the beginning. You know it's based off a true exorcism that Blatty saw?
Yes, I did know.
Did you read up on that one?
I did not.
Much like some of the ADAC cases...
Questionable.
I'm not. People can make their own judgment. It's not true.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, the doctor and his mentor witness this. You would be like, this girl needs help outside of our thing.
Yeah, never bring her back here again.
Yeah. Instead, they go out and they're like, I think she's just acting up. She's just acting crazy. And the mom's like, what the fuck are you saying? And he's like, maybe you have drugs in the house that she took. And the mom's like, I do not have drugs in the house. Yeah. Like, they are fucking out of control.
Listen, in their defense.
Who's going to think?
They can't diagnose anything. And that girl is out of her fucking mind.
And actually, the fact that they even are, like, the fact that one of them even pitches the exorcism to Chris is kind of fucking nuts. Like, listen.
I agree. Like, that it came from them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Maybe an exorcism's in the book.
Science isn't but working.
I actually did like the way they set that up where they were like, listen, we don't believe in possession, but like if she believes in possession,
yes,
she could have gotten herself into that. Yes. So an exorcism might make her think, like an exorcism isn't real, but it might get her out of that, yes, state, which I thought was like actually like kind of a cool concept.
Agreed. Which is also funny because they're like, exorcisms are extremely hard,
yes,
to get approved. And then they just immediately get approved. And that also is the case in real life, because you read about it, it's like, it can never happen. The fucking house down the street from me that we covered in Ada in Southington, the haunting in, yo, Connecticut, yeah, they got an exorcism for that house.
That was my favorite part of this. When they go to Father Karras about the exorcism, he's like, don't do it. It's going to cause more trouble. And it's a whole process. And then the process was, he went to the, like, his church and was like, they want an exorcism. And they were like, well, what do you think? And he was like, I don't know. And they're like, yeah, just do it.
That's pretty much it.
They're like, why don't you do it for good measure?
Yeah. Like, that
was, he honestly is like, I don't know whether it's real or not. And they were like, meh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Worth the shot.
That's it. And I don't know if he said it before. Like, he specializes in psychology.
Yes. No, I didn't.
He like
Karras does.
Karras does. He works with people in that. So that's why maybe his word holds more weight, but still that was not a painful process.
And I guess that is where it differs a lot with the book, and that's where a lot of people took exception with, and the churches took exception with it, where they were like, they made it seem like getting an exorcism was very easily. Which, why are churches even acknowledging that?
I mean, also, it's a movie.
Like, yeah.
You got to fucking speed it up a little bit.
Dude, there was one quote that was, oh my God. Somebody was like, this movie was so unreal. Hey, guy. We know it's unrealistic. It's a fucking movie about the devil possessing someone, or demon possessing someone. Of course it's unrealistic, you fucking dumb shit. Some critic was like, what a hack. This isn't real. Okay. Yeah, we know. Fucking dipshit. Anyway, so the doctors pitch doing the exorcism. Also we learned that the director, Burke, was found dead on the stairwell outside the house with his head spun all the way around.
Yes.
Not great.
Yeah. And they talked and they say, could that have happened from the fall? And of course our guy, what's his name? Kinderman.
Kinderman.
Kinderman's like, it could, but it probably didn't, but it might have.
Dude, there's no fucking way. There's no fucking way. Falling down would twist your head 100%.
But, and his response, like, just give it definitive. Like, isn't that what your forensics are for? Like, no, it didn't happen from the fall. It happened beforehand. I mean, I think you could know that. But his answer is just like, it wasn't, but it could have been, but it might have been. Like, come on, Kinderman.
It's so bizarre.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 nine-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
So the doctor's pitch, Reagan should go to maybe do an exorcism, which Chris is like, I don't know, until she comes home and finds Reagan, masturbating with the crucifix, and then shoving the mom's face in her fucking vagina.
That's
nuts.
Shoving the face in the bloody vagina might be worse than watching her stab herself. It's so obscene, dude, to film that.
Dude, it's obscene. And what kills that scene is that Chris, the mom, pulling away and having the blood on her mouth.
And just like crying in like agony for her daughter.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that is insane. That is insane. And the spinning head for the first time.
Yeah.
She tearfully asks Karras to do the exorcism, who explains why it's a bad idea. And the movie pace is like really interesting in this, because we haven't seen a ton, and you're at about an hour and a half in right now, and you like the 30 minutes, the last 30 minutes are just like, it gives, boom.
It's, yeah.
It's awesome. But like, it also does not go by slow at the beginning. Like it's a no. really well-paced movie.
No, and it has those different storylines that you get invested in. It,
yeah.
They did it well.
And Reagan's makeup is nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Who did the makeup on this? Did you get the name?
It was just a makeup artist. Like it, I think it was like a single makeup artist. It wasn't like anyone that I was aware of famously, if you will. Smith, the makeup artist. I just got a last name, I guess. Smith.
Marcel Vercotier.
So I don't know who Smith is.
With apologies to Smith.
With apologies to Smith. Karis goes to visit Reagan for the first time. Such a good scene. Your mother is in here with us, Karis. Would you like to leave a message? Which I think is like the most diabolical thing to say.
Yeah.
And then vomits the green slime
yeah. all over him. And Karis being like, oh, yeah, well, what's my mom's maiden name?
Yeah, dude, he thinks he's got, like, this demon, like, figured out. He's like, yeah, what about this? Like, he's like, well, if you're the devil, why don't you just get rid of these restraints? And, like, Reagan's like, it's a vulgar display of power, which I think is fucking...
It's a badass line.
Yeah.
It's a badass line.
Yeah. And also, like, shuts down Karis, like...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, actually, it explains any loophole because it's moving furniture and stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's doing whatever. Dude, it's opening drawers in front of Karis, and Karis was like, was that you? That scene is so stupid. Karis is such a fucking mopey idiot.
Did you do that?
And she's like, yeah. And he's like, well, why don't you do it again? Dude, she opened a fucking drawer in front of me. You don't need to any more proof. What more do you need her to do? And she's like, no. Like,
why do you need more proof once you got vomited on by that fucking green pea shit? Actually, what are we saying? Look at her fucking face, dude. Her entire face is transformed, and it's like chapped.
She's a monster. She's a fucking monster.
If she's possessed at this point. Just fucking show someone her.
The self-harm she's inflicted on herself. I read about the makeup for it, and I actually think it's super interesting. So the woman that did the makeup, or man, I don't remember actually. She was like, I wanted the wounds. He or she wanted the wounds to look... like you couldn't tell whether it was self-inflicted and now like necrotic and rotting and infected, or if it was something more
sinister
and evil about it. And I was like, oh, that's like really cool. Cause like you can't tell. Like it is like, I always thought it was self-inflicted and like rotting and stuff, but like to think of it like, yeah, like it like suspends that, like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. And that was her decision. That wasn't like directed by anyone. So I think that's really cool. Anyway, they asked Karis to do it. Karis is like, hey, I'll do more harm than good if I exercise this girl. And fucking Chris is like, hey, asshole. I don't think things can get worse than right now, which was Karis gets put in his spot more times by all the people around him. It's so fucking, especially when Marin shows up. Marin just shuts this guy down constantly because this fucking mope is like, wouldn't you like to know the whole story?
Dude, he does that twice. Yes. He does that twice.
And Marin's like, shut the fuck up. I don't give a fuck.
Wait, what, isn't Marin's response just like, why would I?
Yeah, he goes, don't you want to know the backstory? And Marin goes, why? Yeah. And that's the end of the scene. And it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, and then they go up in the room and like we were just saying, wouldn't you just look at Reagan?
You know, that's all you need.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know. She's fucking possessed.
I should tell you what the demon's been saying. And Marin's like, I don't have fucking time for that.
Either she's possessed or she's not. And I'm going to go do the rites of an exorcism. And we're going to get rid of it. Like, there's no reason I need the story.
The fuck is that noise?
There.
It's there?
Yeah.
Did it just kick on?
Yeah, I
think weird.
And then he walks in and Reagan's like, what a wonderful day for an exorcism, which is another
great
good
line. Great line.
And he says, wouldn't that drive you out of Reagan? And he said, it would bring us together,
yes.
You and us, which I think is fucking awesome.
Yes.
So Karis gets the approval from the church. They decide to use Lancaster Merritt as the exorcist. He was the archaeologist that we met at the beginning of the movie. He had done a previous exorcism in Kenya that almost killed him. So, of course, naturally, let's send him in to do this one also.
And we know he has heart problems. He takes heart pills, heart medication.
They say all of this when they're talking. They're, like, weighing out whether they should use him or not. And they're like, well, he almost died. He's sick. And he's really just trying to take it easy right now in the woods of Woodstock. And they're like, yeah, just call him up, fucking drag his ass down to Georgetown and fucking have him do another one. Anyway, so Marin is great, and he shows up, and he tells Karis to get all the supplies, and Karis is like, do you want to get the background first? He says, why? And then the exorcism begins. I actually don't have a lot of notes here because this scene is just to be watched. It is a full exorcism. Yeah. Like, it is the whole process, and it is not boring at all. It's amazing.
No.
Yeah. But it's not something you're going to, what am I going to be like? Then they say this, and then they do an Our Father.
I mean, the acting is next level. Like, Max von Sydow is so stoic, like we've said. Like, he is business. Nothing's deterring him. And, you know, Miller, I keep forgetting his first name, Jason?
Yeah.
Jason Miller, he really plays the part of somebody who's struggling with his faith and, like, trying to come to terms with, like, what he's seeing. And it's so believable. Those two guys are so believable that you just feel like you're actually watching exorcism.
Yes.
And Linda Blair, I know it's not her voice, but, like, her body reactions and, like, the twitching, everything is just absolutely perfect. So.
And Karis is really having trouble. And, like, it's even frustrating to watch. Like, you get frustrated with Karis because Marin is just fucking hammering this exorcism out, and then it gets to Karis's line, and he freezes, and he's just staring because Reagan is floating above a fucking bed. A human being is floating in the air, and he's just like, what the fuck?
I love this movie.
Yeah, it's so fucking good, and he can't speak because who fucking could seeing this for the first time?
Yes.
You would lose your mind. You'd be like, this is unreal. This is next level. So yeah, it's really great to see that and that balance between Marin and Karis.
Yeah, I mean, Marin sends him out of the room. He's like, go get a fucking grip.
Yeah, and that is when Marin dies.
Well, it was so right before that, Marin goes, he needs to go take a piss.
Well, yeah, Marin, they both take a break because they've just been vomited on like 5 times. It's a fucking disaster.
Dude, that room
must stink. Fucking reek. Yeah, it fucking stinks. You can't spend
too long. Castle.
you can't spend too long in there. You got to go take a breather. So they take a breather. And that's when Marin goes to the bathroom to take his medicine because he's actually having a really hard time with this. And that's when
also another great acting scene. Like, it's such like a throwaway scene, but he, like, his hands, because he's so stoic and, like, by the, like, he is going, he's determined, he's going to get this done. But then he takes that break, and, like, you see that this man's fucking terrified.
Yeah.
Like, his hands will not stop shaking.
No, that's actually a great point because, at the beginning, he's like, we're doing, like, they even ask him, like, do you need rest? Because he, like, flew in or whatever. And he's like, we got to do this. Like, we have to do this right now. Like, let's just fucking do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good point. And then, that's when Karis goes into the room and gets into a fight with the fucking demon who's
talking shit. So next man side of Marin dies. He has a heart attack. And then Karis returns, sees him dead. And
You know what?
The most realistic part of this movie so far, because at some point
you just punch fucking Linda Blair in the fucking face.
What am I looking at? What am I doing here?
It's true. Like, this is not a human.
This thing is insulting my dead mother.
This thing is throwing my dead mother's voice somehow and saying shit to me with my mom's voice.
It deserves a punch in the face.
It really does.
And he does. And he beats the shit out of it. And then he's just yelling, take me, take me. he got his faith back, man. He believes. He believes that he can overcome it. And the demon does. It jumps from Reagan to Karis. And the special effects here, dude,
are great.
When it, like, because it goes from Karis is like real face to kind of possessed to full out possessed back to kind of possessed. Like,
yeah,
it's fucking awesome.
It's really cool. Also, I do want to mention my favorite Reagan possessed line is, stick your motherfucking cock up my ass, you cocksucker. Who the fuck wrote that? Fucking mental. That's fucking crazy. But yes, so it jumps into Karis, and Karis jumps out a window.
Yeah, yeah, he gets fully possessed, but then fights it long enough to overcome it and throws himself from that same window that old drunk Irishman was thrown from.
Yep. And that's that. That's Father Dyer shows up.
We watch him like bounce down those stairs.
Yeah, dude.
Dude, honestly, when Father Dyer shows up, it kind of like breaks my heart. Like there's something like so, well, actually that guy's a great actor too, because he's so sad that his friend's dying and like he holds his hand and asks if he wants to make any confessions. He
gives him the last rites. Yeah. Fucking crazy.
Yeah. And like Karis,
to a guy that's clearly dead.
No, he's still alive, dude, because his fingers are moving.
Oh my
God. So he's like, he's just like dying of blunt force trauma. Like you're watching a man die of blunt force trauma. Which, like, you don't need to see in a movie. It's honestly very heartbreaking.
I actually hate that. I actually hate
the
that.
The blood is spilling from his face. He's just twitching his fingers.
Oh, I hate that so much. Now those are the stairs of the Joker too, right? Or like similar area?
I don't know if it's the same, but I think it was. They're both in the same area.
Same area, yeah. Yeah.
Paul's fucking punching the air right now.
Actually, those stairs are.
He has a picture on those stairs.
That's for the Exorcist, or the Joker. Okay. I just want to see Paul doing the Joker dance down the stairs.
I can see that.
I'm gonna take Paul there just to get that picture.
His brother, I don't think, lives too far.
Oh, there you go.
Giving all Paul's family's personal information.
Well, I hope Paul doesn't listen to this episode because he's just going to fucking correct everything we say. No. He's going to be like, you actually.
Pazoopy.
Pazoopy. Father Dyer gives him his last rites. And then. Oh, I didn't plug in my fucking laptop. So I should probably do that real quick. Good radio content. All right. Father Dyer gives the last rites. And then he, you know, a few days later, the McNeils are like, we're out of here. Father Dyer sees them off. Little Reagan gives him a kiss of appreciation.
Even though she doesn't remember anything.
But there's something in her eyes saying, because like, she sees the
psychic fucking powers.
She sees the priest collar and is like, I know this is goodness, and like gives him a kiss. And then in the director's cut, well, in the end of this, Reagan's mom gives him the necklace of Father Karis that got ripped off by Reagan. And in the director's cut, he gives it back to her. And then turns, and then the cop's there. And then they're like, boy, what a wild adventure. And then leave
together. And then let me tell you about my best friend, please, as they walk
let out. Me tell you about my best friend. And that's The Exorcist.
Yeah, man.
I didn't think we'd be able to talk about The Exorcist, and we fucking did.
Why didn't you?
I don't know. Just like, I still sometimes get in that mindset of...
dude, we're good now.
Yeah, I know. We can talk about any movie, right? But it is good. It is good. Would you recommend it?
I would recommend it.
One of the best movies of all time. So what do you think? Would you recommend it or not? And we're trying to actually burn it in here in the screen.
Yeah. We've been hours.
It's been since like 2 p.m. since we got here. It's been here. So The Exorcist, I'm going to burn that into their LCD screen.
What an iconic shot.
Yeah, and I guess that was the way it was written in the book. The shot we're talking about, by the way, if you're not watching the video version, is Max von Sydow sitting, standing outside the lamppost, outside the house, looking up.
At the fog.
Yeah, at the fog in the windows. And it was a really hard shot for them to get, but it was dead on. Like, this is what I love. Friedkin read the book and was like, somehow picked that moment out and was like, I need to recreate this exactly the way it's written in the book.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you read the dialogue from the segment from the book, it's like, they describe him as a traveler showing up for the first time. And like, yeah, that's fucking crazy. Yeah, it's really cool. And it took him a while to get all the lighting and stuff down. And yeah, it's a cool shot. And then they ended up using, like, that's in the movie. And then they just took the frame and used it for every piece of marketing.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you can't use anything of Reagan's face.
Can't sell shit with a mug like that.
Sometimes you hear these stories, right, from all these classic movies, and you're like, yeah, that's a good story in hindsight, but there's no way it actually happened like this. But, like, I want to believe it happened like this so badly. Apparently, Friedkin had, like, a bunch of people over for dinner, and then as the food was getting ready, he read the first three pages of The Exorcist. It was like, everybody get the fuck out of my house. Like, I have to finish reading this book.
No, that, I read that story too. Yeah. He was like at a big dinner party. Yeah, I read that same thing. Yeah, he was like, it claims he was captivated by it. I just don't buy that the first three pages of The Exorcist are that captivating.
There's absolutely no way. Like, you can read the back blurb and get the same gist, right? It's like when Stanley Kubrick, I mean, maybe there's something in, like, these directors, like, genius directors' brains, because Stanley Kubrick read the first, like, 10 pages, maybe it was the first chapter of The Shining, and called Stephen King and was like, I need to make this movie. And Stephen King was like, this book starts off like shit. Like, nobody, this is like my worst start of any story.
Is that, they must just get a vibe from it or something. But I don't know. I also think Friedkin might have just been like, I'm going to get out of this dinner party.
You know what? Now I'm 100% on board that this happened, because I would totally do it.
Yeah, but then you're like forced to read the book because your wife is there, and it's like, and then, you just kicked out all of our friends, and you're like, yeah, it's for this book.
And then you actually
and you have like, to actually like, read it, and then you're like, oh wait, this is God. Good. That's probably what happened. Dude, imagine just kicking every one of your friends out for a book.
I'm going to do that next 4th of July party.
Dude. Everyone get out. We've got a book to read. Well, that's that, guys. We still have a contest going on. So send us, speaking of The Exorcist, because we got our three Exorcist movies this month. All three. We're doing number two. We've done the third one on the show, right?
Oh, no.
The one with the scissors?
Yes, I know what the third one is. But I don't
know. Is that the one with the scissors?
Yeah.
Yeah, then we did that. Because that was the only time I watched it.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Was it for the part threes then? Because maybe we just brushed through it. I don't think we did a full episode.
I think we did do a full episode.
But you know, maybe we're on Spotify, so we can Google.
What am I saying? It might have been.
I don't know, dude. No.
It might have been the threes, is what I was trying to say. Okay. So The Exorcist 4K is available. It's turning 50, celebrating its 50th anniversary. The Exorcist remains one of the greatest thrillers ever. The film that changed the way the genre is defined is now available in stunning 4K. Look for The Exorcist on 4K Ultra HD. And our friends over at Warner Brothers have given us some codes. We've got 10 digital The Exorcist on 4K movie download codes. Oh, no, it says right there. That we can give away to you guys. So send us your favorite Exorcist moments or memories of watching it or first time you saw it, and we'll give away those codes to you guys. So there's that. WarnerBrothers.com/movies/Exorcist or Facebook.com/TheExorcist.official. So take a look there, and we have all the information on our Instagram if you want to take a look there and submit it to Sean@IHateHorror.com. Email me those memories and you'll be entered to win. Okay. What else? That's it. We're doing the live show.
Adios.
Adios. That's it, everyone. Thank you all so much. Thank you to Joe. Thank you all for listening. For Joe, this is Sean. Stay weird.
Thank you.
Adios. Oh, no. How do I end this?
Movies all fucking day. I wanna play. I'm gonna watch what I'm not supposed to watch. Fucking zombie getting sliced and diced. The monster.